The Big Story is brought to you by Scotiabank. Our story starts with an expensive mansion in Toronto's most exclusive neighborhood. It winds its way through contracts and loans and mortgages and buyers, all of the business handled by a young real estate lawyer who found herself at the center of an alleged $17 million worth of fraud. And the story concludes somewhere across the world in the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, in a tiny home that borders a sheep farm and reeks of manure, where our no-longer-so-young real estate lawyer resided, surrounded by 70 stray cats, while the criminal case to which she is now a crown witness mounted back home. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is quite an episode of The Big Story, so please settle in and enjoy. Nick Kohler is a freelance writer who has worked for Maclean's, for The Guardian, for The Globe and Mail, for several other publications, and the reason we're talking to him today is a long and winding feature in Toronto Life magazine, which has, well, everything we just mentioned. So Nick, we're going to start with the lawyer at the center of this story. Who is Golnaz Vakili?
So Golnaz Vakili is this sort of charming, gregarious, energetic woman who in 2010 was called to the bar. She was a lawyer, got into real estate law. Instead of seeking work at a big firm, she decides to kind of go freelance. She's a sole proprietor. She moves into office space in this shared kind of law suite up at Yonge and Sheppard.
In Toronto.
And she figures she doesn't like taking direction. Maybe she has a problem with authority. And she goes into business on her own, and she figures real estate law, it's easy to get cash flow going.
Yep.
As opposed to other kinds of law. And she has a number of older lawyers around her working in the shared office space, but no mentor and certainly no guidance. And
right.
The lack of adult supervision in this story is a theme that we should keep our eye on, because one of these older lawyers in the building ends up more or less introducing her to this gentleman named Arash Misagi, who, like Golnaz, is of Iranian extraction. He is a very successful real estate guy. He bills himself as sort of a guy who puts real estate deals together. And he says to her he often needs legal help. And would she like to get some work from him? She's leery of this guy. He's got really penetrating eyes. He speaks in this kind of rasp, apparently. It's been said that it has Godfather overtones.
Hmm.
And so she says, I've got enough business. I'll go elsewhere to find my work.
So he initially put her off. Like she was not buying it at first.
She was not buying it. Although it must be said that she was impressed by this guy, a fellow Persian, who looked like he was doing really well.
Right.
And you have to remember, this is an impressive guy.
Describe him to me.
He's this really tall, big man who wears, you know, Armani baseball caps to cover, it's said, his bald spot. And he's got these really piercing eyes. But he was also sophisticated. Golnaz told me that she was impressed by his mastery of the world of real estate, not just in terms of business, but legally. He knew what he was doing, and clearly he knew what he wanted in terms of the kind of lawyer to bring onto his team.
But she turns him down initially.
She turns him down, but he's persistent. He goes after her. In the end, I guess she finds it irresistible, and she starts doing more and more little jobs for Arash Misagi. What she didn't know, Arash Misagi, although he's never been convicted, has had a string of charges across the GTA from different police forces.
What kind of charges?
So it was said that he was involved in cargo theft, drugs, police raids uncovered, huge amounts of cash, a gun. Really ominously, police uniforms. And he was also involved in a mortgage scam, allegedly, involving a man named Curlew Moulton. Curlew Moulton is in jail now. He is one of Toronto's most notorious heroin dealers. Arash Misagi took this guy for millions of dollars. and he's still walking around, which is an indication of the kind of company he may keep. He, you know, bilked a drug trafficker.
So Vakili doesn't know any of this.
He doesn't know any of this. And nor do, apparently, the private lenders that Misagi depends on for cash flow and to invest in the properties that he is dealing with.
So explain to me what Vakili is doing and what's happening.
It's hard to say in general terms because the tasks that Vakili gets are really pretty various. And the first transaction that may be of any interest to us involves a property in the Bridle Path. The Bridle Path, if you don't know, is probably the most exclusive neighborhood in Canada, one of the most exclusive neighborhoods in North America.
Yeah, thinking Drake, Prince when he lived in Toronto. Yeah.
Conrad Black.
Yeah, people like that.
Yeah.
Expensive, expensive homes.
That's right. And it involves 7 High Point, which is the property really at the center of this story, although there are about a dozen properties that come into play as this all unfolds. And she is working ostensibly for the owners of this property, Vaskin and Annie Yeritsian, this family of Armenian background. She transfers, apparently at the behest of Vaskin, the property to a numbered company, of which Vaskin Yeritsian is the sole director. And so far, so good. A few days later, however, that numbered company is transferred so that it's under the control of one of Arash Misagi's associates, Grant Ehrlich, who is a member of this ring, which, unbeknownst to Golnaz Vakili, she's sort of been drawn into and is doing the bidding of.
Right. Now, there are a ton of details in your story on how this ring operates and multiple transactions. And we will get to sort of the sum total of that. But for now, if you can, explain to us how a ring like that allegedly makes money.
There are two components to this. The first one is, pretty much everybody that a ring like this is going to be exploiting, it's people who are in financial trouble.
Who own property
and have run into difficulties with the banks. And they need money. They can't get a conventional loan. And so what do? They go to the non-conventional side of things and they go to private lenders. A kind of vernacular term for this is loan sharks.
Right.
It's funny because the people that you read about in this story, they don't fit the template, let's say, of what a loan shark looks like. They're single moms and grandmothers. But that's where Misagi is turning to get some of his money, and that's where he directs his real estate clients often to get money. They are these private lenders investing in these properties, and they are, in exchange, getting mortgages. The trouble is that those mortgages are not bona fide in many cases, and the money is pocketed by Arash Misagi, allegedly.
So what does a not bona fide mortgage look like?
It's not real. It's forged or it's doctored in some way.
So it's not registered anywhere.
Again, it's hard to speak in blanket terms here because every one of these cases is just a little bit different. In some cases, the lenders were promised first-ranking mortgages. So that means that, you know, when push comes to shove, they're the first in line to get the money.
Right.
When, in fact, they were sometimes fifth, sixth down the list of priorities, which means you're not likely to see any money.
So the couple that owns 7 High Point needed money. So they go to?
They go to Arash Misagi, and they initially borrow money from him.
Through one of his?
Actually, in that particular case, it was from him.
Okay.
In the end, they had a lot of money borrowed on that property, and the sheriff evicted them. This emptied the property, and it made it a lot easier for Arash Misagi to put in place what amounts to an imposter owner. He had a guy who worked for him. He eventually became Arash Misagi's driver and kind of gopher. He gave this guy, whose name is Bob Bakey, allegedly his Bentley or a Bentley that he had access to drive. He showed up at the house, the 7 High Point, while a group of private investors was looking at the property and posed as the owner, when in fact he had nothing to do with the property and knew nothing about it.
Huh.
Again, this is all stuff that has to be proved at a criminal trial, but
of course,
these are the allegations. And this is the guy who needs money, at least as far as the story goes. And so after some courting, these private lenders give him a loan in exchange for a mortgage.
They think he's the owner of the property. He shows up in a Bentley.
That's right.
He looks like he's a good bet.
Right. What they don't know, the private lenders, is that the mortgage is not real, allegedly, and that Bob Baikie gets the money, passes it on to Arash Misagi, so the story goes, and Arash Misagi uses that money to buy the mortgage himself. And all along, he's paying phony interest payments to the private lenders.
And our story really involves Gornaz Vakili.
Yes.
What's her role, allegedly, in a scheme like this? Why is she so integral to this story?
Because Arash Misagi convinces everybody that he's doing business with, or many of the people, to, hey, you need somebody to do your legals on this deal? I have just the lawyer for you. She knows exactly how we operate, and this will make things easier for you and easier for me. And so the private lenders who are shown around the property by Bob Baikie, allegedly, they hire Vakili, and she takes care of the paperwork. Now, at this stage of the game, she just thinks this is a pretty good gig.
Right.
She doesn't know, or so she says, that there's anything nefarious happening. But at a certain point, things turn, and she begins to understand that the group that she has become so involved in is not what she thought it was.
Up next.
She is so frightened of this man who before was just like any other kind of business associate that she finds herself with no option but to do everything he asks.
You can save like never before with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. And now, for a limited time, you can earn up to 3.2% interest until March 10th. You can find all the terms and conditions at scotiabank.com/MP.
Things turn, and she begins to understand that the group that she has become so involved in is not what she thought it was.
How does that happen?
It involves the same private lenders who were investing in Seven High Point, but it's a dumpy little property out in, you know, Scarborough or something, almost like an industrial building. And Misagi is trying to persuade one of the private lenders to invest in that address. Things look like they're going as they should. But then Vakili gets a call from Misagi who says, hey, the borrower in relation to this property needs the money faster than this deal is going to get it to them. You have the money already sitting there in your trust account. Why don't you send it to me now?
Because that's not the point of a trust account.
Exactly. This is how the story goes. Vakili is suspicious, and she goes to ask the lender, hey, are you okay with this? And the lender says, no way. The deal hasn't closed. And so when she informs Misagi of this, again, allegedly, he becomes incensed and says, you've scotched the deal, you've screwed it up, it's your fault, and slams the phone down. And a few hours later, he shows up at her office and, according to Vakili, becomes menacing and presents her with a letter from the client, from the lender, spelling out approval for this premature release of the funds. And she looks at it, and it looks real. And she is being told by this guy who's towering over her and sort of, I think, almost shaking his fist, it's up to you to do this. She can't confirm the authenticity of this document. And she decides, given the difficulty she's having with Misagi, to go ahead and release the funds. Only later does she realize that it's one of these cases where the mortgage is not as advertised and that the lender is way down the list of priority on this mortgage. There are people ahead of that person in line. And she calls Misagi in a panic and says, we've made a terrible error. We have to reverse this transaction.
She thinks there's been a bad mistake.
Yeah. Send the money back. And that's when Misagi, according to her, threatens her family with legal encumbrances and entanglements. He's going to put liens on her parents' home. And then little by little, according to her, he lets her in on the truth of his criminal background and that it has violent dimensions to it, that he is capable, according to her, he says to her, of doing people harm. At that point, she is so frightened of this man who before was just like any other kind of business associate, that she finds herself with no option but to do everything he asks.
So she's now willingly, or at least knowingly, a part of this, as opposed to, as she would have said before, somebody who was just being bilked.
Whereas prior to this moment, she had been involved in these allegedly criminal activities unknowingly, unwittingly. Now she wittingly is conducting these illicit transactions.
She would say under duress.
She would say under duress. And when you talk to her, you believe her. She gives a very compelling take on this journey.
How much in total? Because I don't want to get into one property to the next property to the next. But this is allegedly a ring that has used mortgage fraud and other kinds of fraud to amass what?
All told, it's around $17 million. And it involves mainly two private lenders. It was a group of four. And then a number of other people. All of them, or many of them, just regular folks who needed the money and were in trouble. And so they sought these private loans.
So what does Vakili's life become when she is now fully immersed in this alleged ring?
She is increasingly stressed out. According to her, she is running from property to property or client to client, doing what she knows now are underhanded things. And she is eating nothing but, you know, coffee type of thing. Like she's existing on coffee and junk food at night. And she gains all of this weight, she tells me. I think, you know, she had her skin broke out, her hair thinned, and she had no one to turn to. She couldn't even confide in her husband or her parents. It's a very close family, because she felt that if she were to let them into the reality of what her job was becoming, she might put them into danger.
So how did this come crashing down?
When you go through the court documents, there's this kind of momentum that starts picking up, and the walls are closing in around Vakili in a way that they're not closing in around Misagi, the alleged mastermind. What happens is that lawyers who are involved on the other side of these transactions begin to see things that aren't terribly kosher. They go to the Law Society. The Law Society starts looking into Vakili. Mm. There are a couple of these instances that pop up. But it's really Seven High Point, this mansion, this palatial property that was the beginning of it all for Vakili, that starts to kind of dog her, to hound her. The owners of that property, the real owners, not the paper owner that I described earlier with Misagi and his phony mortgage and the fact that he invested in that with the money that he'd got from the lenders. The owners are reasserting themselves as the real people on title. And eventually they take her to the land registry. And she says, oh, yeah, I did do this transfer, but it was actually my legal assistant who did the nitty gritty.
Oh.
And it was supposed to be on 17 High Point, not 7. What this is Vakili is lying. And in fact, this is going to lead to one of the charges that she later pleads guilty to. But she lies. And what that does is it buys time for Vakili and the group. At the same time, the private lenders that had come into play with 7 High Point, they find that Vakili is not moving fast enough in terms of dealing with one of the mortgages that's matured. And they want action. They want the money.
Right.
And Vakili is she's putting them off. And so the private lender says, hey, you know what? I'm just going to go to a different lawyer and I'll take care of it. Don't do that. Now, listen, most of the money is coming out of these private lenders. And the fact that they are getting antsy and maybe a little suspicious means that their world will crumble, the world of Vakili and the mortgage fraud scams.
Once anybody goes outside the little world.
That's right. So she says, please, I'm taking care of it. And as part of this, she gives her paperwork as proof of the fact that she is still acting on good faith with this, and that she's going to get her the money that's coming to her. Well, the private lender looks at the documentation and goes to an expert, and lo and behold, the expert says, this is fake. Well, she gets a call, Vakili gets a call from the private lender. Things are falling apart at an increasingly precipitous rate. Vakili, in a panic, calls Misagi, and she says, hey, you know, they're on to us. The jig is up. And Misagi says, you wait right there in your office. And he shows up, eventually removes her from this situation and moves her into a condo that he has only just purchased right down on the Toronto waterfront. They bring in folding chairs and folding desks, and they set up a kind of command post in this condo to figure out how to deal with this house of cards, this, you know, mortgage after mortgage after phony mortgage, allegedly. And he keeps her in a kind of quarantine.
To keep her from talking to anybody else.
To keep her from talking to anybody else. He permits her to go home at night to her husband, but very late at night, he has a driver pick her up from her home, takes her to the condo and then back again. And this goes on for days and days and days and days. During all of this, according to Vakili, Misagi kind of ups the pressure on her and suggests that there are many things that he could do that would not be welcomed by she or her family. And then he says, there's only one way to go now. You have to leave the country.
And this is where it becomes a story that people might recognize.
That's right. So Vakili vanished entirely. She left her office entirely intact, except computers and files were gone. But all her personal belongings were there. She wasn't. The Law Society investigators show up looking for her. Clients are looking for her. Her husband shows up looking for her.
She's just gone.
And she's gone. And in fact, Vakili's parents told me that they were in the dark as to exactly what was going on with their daughter until the reporters showed up from the Toronto Star at their door talking about their missing daughter and $17 million, huh? The parents weren't aware of this.
So where was she?
Well, Misagi gave her allegedly an itinerary designed to hide her tracks. She flew to Brussels, took a train to Paris, and spent a few months there walking around the city until she was exhausted because you have to imagine, this was a young, ambitious lawyer. Her life and her career had been entirely upended by this mortgage fraud group, alleged mortgage fraud group. She was terribly ashamed by what had happened and I think depressed. And she was awaiting word from Misagi, with whom she had left her telephone and her credit card so that she couldn't be tracked. She was relying entirely, according to her, on funds given to her by the group that she'd been working with. And she was waiting for word, like, when can I come back?
Yeah, she's living on the lam.
She's living on the lam, and she's told that she'll be able to come back in a few months when everything blows over. Well, that's not what happens. The first thing that she hears from Misagi, according to her, is, hey, why don't you, I'll give you X number of dollars, I think it was several hundred thousand dollars, to give up your identity and go live in Brazil. And I'll give you, I'll equip you with a business that will keep you going. She says, what are you talking about? We said that I would be able to come back, that you would take care of things. He says, no. We still need time. So eventually she goes to Northern Cyprus. Now, Northern Cyprus, this little island half controlled by Turkey. I didn't know this, but it's where any British fugitive from the law goes to hide from authorities. It's a kind of a paradise for people on the lam. And somehow this group figures this out and says, hey, this is the perfect place to send Vakili. And so she shows up in Northern Cyprus. She moves into this, it sounds like a little cottage that backs onto a sheep farm. It reeks of manure. And she becomes obsessed with looking after sort of homeless animals, animals at risk. She, at one point, she adopts dogs and cats. At one point, it's like 70 cats she's living with. This is the story that she had needed something to get her mind off how her life had been exploded.
Right.
So she starts looking after these animals. And she's not exactly living high on the hog. She has very little money. At certain points, she's like eating the food that she would ordinarily give to the animals. That's how skint she is. So that's the story. For 4 years, Vakili lives in this manor in northern Cyprus, a paradise for fugitives.
When did she come back?
At a certain point, she realizes that she can't go on living like this. Her family, who by now they know where she is, they end up visiting her. They help her and they hire a private investigator. Ostensibly, at first they want to know, hey, how bad is this Misagi really? And so they hire him to look into this. Is it safe for her to come home? The investigator says, I need to go and talk to her. And so they fly him to northern Cyprus and he basically interviews her for 11 hours and records all of this discussion to find out what's happened. How has she ended up in this position? And at the end, after hearing all of this story, he says, look, there's no good reason to look into Misagi. You have only one choice available to you if you want to get out of here. You have to go to the police. And Vakili decided that that's what she would do. And so the private investigator delivered this 11 hours of audio recordings to the police, who all along have been trying to make heads or tail of this story, but who had been stymied by the absence of the key figure in all of this, the lawyer who had looked after all of the legals. Vakili was the missing and crucial component to a criminal investigation. And when they heard the tapes of these 11 hours of interview, they said, this is what we needed. And so they arrange to have her return to Canada. And she begins cooperating with police. Now, there was no deal in place with prosecutors. And in fact, prosecutors wanted to send her to jail.
So this is not a plea deal. This is her just unburdening herself.
This is not a plea deal. No, it isn't. And she hires Marie Hanin to be her lawyer. She's charged. She ends up pleading guilty to two charges, a forgery charge and I believe an obstruct charge. She shows up for a hearing, which becomes a sentencing hearing. And I pulled the audio. That's how you get this information from the courts. And you hear Marie Hanin in this.
Who is one of the most famous lawyers in Toronto and Canada.
That's right. I mean, I think Vakili told me that it was her mother who said, let's just hire Marie Hanin. It makes sense. She had defended Gian Gomeshi. You hear her lay out this story of Vakili and her journey from, you know, young lawyer to a fugitive in northern Cyprus. And it's Marie Hanin ought to be like a Hollywood scriptwriter. It's an incredible story. And the judge agrees with, you know, like 98% of it. And so Vakili is sentenced to 2 years less a day. I believe she's still in house arrest.
She's on the lam for 4 years and she's back in Toronto. What happened after she pleads guilty and the sentencing is done? What happened to her family, to her marriage?
That was one of the questions that I had going into the reporting. Did this marriage survive? They were high school sweethearts, she and her husband, Mehdi. I told you that I had pulled the audio for this sentencing hearing. You hear this baby crying in the background the whole time. And she had returned to the marriage and they have a young son.
Wow. And they're still together.
And they're still together. And the family is coping with all of this.
What has happened to the rest of the people that police suspect were involved in this?
Aside from Vakili, who's pleaded guilty to two charges, all the other charges in relation to this story have yet to be proven in court. So earlier this year, the members of the ring, it's a handful of people who were said to have been involved in this ring. They've been slapped with multiple charges. Sometime within the next 2 years, they'll likely be a criminal trial. And Vakili is going to be key to that trial, because she will be testifying in support of the Crown's position.
What an insane story.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy.
Nick Kohler, freelance writer, investigative journalist, incredible storyteller. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotiabank. You can earn up to 3.2% interest until March 10th with the Scotiabank Momentum Plus Savings Account. Conditions apply. For more from us, hit us up at thebigstorypodcast.com. All our episodes are there, our contact us form, and we do want to hear from you. You can also find us on social media. If you don't know by now, at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And if you haven't listened to me yet when I tell you to visit us wherever you get your podcasts and rate and review, tell us what you think. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for sticking with us all the way through the longest episode ever of The Big Story. We appreciate you listening. We'll talk tomorrow.